Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. We have a great paradigm shifter with us today, James Olson, who's going to teach us or talk about his book, The Whole Brain Path to Peace. He's talking about how right brain and left brain dominance can bring us to different conclusions in life. And he does say when we make choices to even that out, we could create peace on earth. So welcome to the show, James Olson.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Peace on, well, it's wonderful to talk to you, and I would really like to see peace on earth. How many brains do you think we have to change?
Well, there seems to be some sort of critical mass that when that happens, things go viral. And so I don't know how many that is, but hopefully it's a small enough number that we can reach it very quickly within this year. I'm hoping. You know, we're approaching the end of the Mayan calendar, and I'm hoping something really good is going to happen. The time for peace is now would be a really good thing to happen in this December.
Well, you know, that's perfect. That's a perfect way to open, because what you're talking about in this book, which I have to say has got wonderful research, and it takes you through all of the kinds of problems we have on the planet where we're overloaded with wanting to separate from one another or dominate one another or evolve or be creative and so on, right? But you're saying in this book that we can make choices about rebalancing our brain hemispheres in order to even out our direct drive or our holistic brain. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. We're born, most of us, either left brain or right brain dominant. And as we use that as children and adults, the more we use it, the more comfortable we get with it, and the more skillful we get using that particular brain. And if we're not careful, we can neglect the non-dominant brain, and so we become either very, very left brain oriented or very right brain oriented. And we're not, and what we need to be is whole brain oriented. It's great to start out with one or the other and be a specialist, but we need to develop the other one. And I think we do to a certain extent through life. And part of what marriage and relationships, when we get into a relationship with someone of the other brain dominance, that helps us to learn, to understand our other brain, at least if we understand our partner, but we often don't. And so I really wrote the book to explain what the two brains see and how they respond, so that we might be in a better position to learn about our non-dominant brain and make better use of it.
It's, and I notice you've brought in an awful lot of layers of how we have built up the way we use the aspects of our brain right through the cultures that we've come from. So let's talk a little bit about who you are. I'm looking at the back of the book here, and you've got management-trained philosopher, but you also have been a farmer. You've been a church deacon. Tell us a little bit about your history and where you made turning points or changes, even in your own brain, if that's what happened.
Well, I was raised on a farm in a very conservative community in northwest Oklahoma, so I have a really good understanding of those values, both from my own left brain and from the very left brain culture in which I was raised. And then in college, I went to the University of Vienna for which was then called a junior year abroad, and that really made a profound effect on my life. It had a tremendous impact. It opened up a new world, and looking back, it really opened up my right brain, because it was a very cultural, multicultural experience, an experience of learning that there were a lot of opinions other than the opinions that I had been raised with. So that really set me off on a path to be more balanced in terms of my perspective. And then I took a weekend workshop one time in which a neuroscientist mapped the brains of the participants and by asking a series of questions. And then he put us in a U-shape according to how left brain or how right brain or how balanced we were. And I found myself out near the end of the left brain portion of the figure, and I was surprised because I thought I was more balanced. And that made me wonder what my brain dominance, how my brain dominance was affecting my perception of reality, and how that made me different from other people, especially as compared to the people on the right side of the spectrum. And so I had been writing a book at that time, but that really shifted the focus of the book. And I've long known that wise men and women say that the most important thing that we can know is to know ourselves. And so I thought, well, what better to know about myself than my brain, how it affects my decision making, because it really affects who I am. I'm more conservative because I have the left brain, which is our conservative brain, and the right brain is really the liberal brain. And so
Was this in university? Were you still in university then, or what were you doing?
No, this was after. I was out.
So this was a number of years ago, was it?
Yes, probably about 20 years ago.
You kind of seeded an evolution in yourself at that point, did you?
Yes.
And so what happened? You began to, when did you get to, I don't want to get to the end of the story right now, but I was just thinking, when did you get to the point where you knew you could change that left brain dominance?
Well, at some point, well, I guess I always knew in a sense, because we can always learn, and I didn't know how difficult it would be at that time, because when you've spent most of your life using the left brain, and that's really difficult to change, and it still hasn't changed. I'm still very left brain dominant. My natural response is to do all the things that the left brain, according to the way the left brain sees and responds. But I have the ability to access right brain qualities. So, for example, although the left brain is very focused and tends to keep me focused, I know that the right brain gives us the big picture, and I know how important the big picture is. It's the context. And so to really understand the focus and what to focus on and how focus is affecting me, we really need to understand the context. We all know how important the context is. So that's one of the things I learned, and at some point I realized that mind has control over brain, just as spirit has control over mind. There's this sort of hierarchy of energy. And we are in control as spirits, and we have freedom of mind. And by shifting what we ask our brain to do, the brain responds automatically. There are a lot of people suggesting exercises that can get us into one brain or the other. But what I found was, if, for example, you get into the right brain somehow, and then ask a left brain question, the left brain is going to answer. So really the key is what do you want to know? Because your brain is going to answer. So the appropriate brain is going to answer.
You mean if you're really being artistic and creative and out there and someone asks a question, it doesn't befuddle us, but it drops us into the left side? Is that right?
Yes, at least for a moment. I mean, the brain shifts back and forth. So I think if you're right brain dominant, you're going to stay in the right brain dominance unless you choose to go into left brain dominance. So you can choose to focus on left brain qualities, but then when you quit focusing, you're going to jump back into your right brain, just as I'm left brain dominant, and I tend to be in my left brain unless I choose to be in my right brain. Although there are, again, circumstances affect this. So a good example of the way the two brains do work together, a good example of that is when we're driving in heavy traffic or even in light traffic. The left brain is looking at the speedometer. It measures the speed. It measures how close we are to the car in front of us because it's in charge of protecting us. And it will be looking in the rearview mirror to see if anybody's tailgating us. Right. And if we're driving with traffic on both sides of us, it's going to look at each side and measure and make evaluations. And the right brain just puts all of this information together, and it says, this guy too close behind you, but you're too close to the guy in front of you, so you need to slow down. So it's the right brain coordinates everything. It brings it all together into the big picture.
So let me jump around a little bit, because the right brain part is jumping around a little bit, isn't it? It's like a whole context, aspects of what's going on.
Yes, it is.
Tell me about, did you go into doing artistic things? I see that you studied philosophy, psychology, Qigong, neuro-linguistic programming, and so on. Did you go through like the effects of these different exercises on your brain?
I didn't hear I missed a word.
The effects of all of these studies on your use of your own brain. Like, for example, Qigong. Did you find you had more access to being able to work by choice with the right and left parts of your brain?
Well, yes. Things like Qigong help relax us. It brings us into our right brain. It gets us out of the left brain, let me back up just a little bit and say that even though I am very left brain, this mapping that this gentleman did of our brains showed that I have a very strong right brain quadrant, and I knew that, and that in a sense because I have a very eclectic taste, and I first realized this in music. As a young man, I was interested in all kinds of music, whereas most of my friends were just interested in rock or, as some people would be interested in primarily in classical. But I was interested in everything. I was
And did you play music?
I took piano.
Great. Mm-hmm. And that's a good way to keep the right brain moving, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And so I'm sure the strength of my right brain qualities is what drew me into these various areas of study. Mm-hmm. Because people tend to focus on one thing, and that's typical of the left brain, that I have all these varied interests in the way I approach this is I let the universe kind of guide me. I try to let the universe guide me. I try to look for things that are brought into my life, and then I follow them up. And so that is kind of the way I was led through the process of writing this book. I researched science, and I researched spirituality, and people would talk to me. Go ahead.
Science itself can very often derive from a very right-brained inspiration, can't it? You know, what's known as science can start way out there. Eh?
Yes. Science, and lately with quantum physics, science is getting more into the right brain areas, and so that's a promising development.
Tell people about cultures. Like Certain cultures are right brain dominated, aren't they? And certain cultures are left brain, are they not,
Yes,
historically?
yes. The Chinese tend to be have a balanced approach, relatively speaking, and in
That's interesting because
Indian,
there's so many of them, huh?
yes,
Mm-hmm.
and in India, the Indian culture tends to be right brain dominant, and I'm speaking of the continent of India, but I think that's also true of our Native Americans. I haven't really seen any studies, but from what I know, growing up in Oklahoma and knowing Native cultures as I do, and I'm certainly no expert, I'm not even a good amateur, but I get the sense that they're right brain. And our own most Western cultures, the European culture and the American culture, is very left brain dominant, and to the point where we've set up our learning institutions according to the way males see reality. So in a sense, we're teaching women to think like men in our culture.
Yeah, that's kind of a shame. I mean, years ago, I was teaching school in Africa, way down there. And it was interesting to me because I'd read D.H. Lawrence, and he talked a lot about, he categorized people as brown-eyed and blue-eyed. And I think what you're saying is the brown-eyed people were very often the right brain, and the blue-eyed very often were like very orderly. And I was teaching kindergarten, and that was true. The blue-eyed kids were sitting in their desks being very appalled as the little African kids were rolling on the floor. And it was quite an exhibit of a very similar thing. They were just being and dancing, and I think that's a good example.
It is interesting.
It was hard to run the class.
Yes, sounds like it.
Anyway, back to you, because I'd like to talk more about cultures, because you talked about 2012 and how the potential is there for the shift, right?
Yes.
So let's continue to talk about some of the ways the culture is running these days with the huge left brain dominance and we women getting sucked into it. Good grief.
Well, we have a very militaristic culture, and excuse me, about lost my headset. Can you hear me? Yeah,
I sure
okay, I
can.
got
Just
back.
don't lose your head because that's what we're talking about today.
Right. The left brain is separative in its action, whereas the right brain is unifying. They're a team, and they're cooperative, they're complementary. And so in a separative culture, such as we have in this country, we solve problems, we tend to solve problems through separation. An example of that is our prisons. That's one way we separate. Another way we separate is to flee to the suburbs or and killing people is that's a separate. You separate people from their lives, and you think maybe that separates you from your problems. But of course, all of these have other effects, and they can be very negative. So that's an example of the difference of a left, and a left brain culture tends to be thought oriented instead of feeling oriented. The right brain is our feeling brain, and when you are like me, very left brain dominant, it's hard to get in touch with your feelings, and it's hard to recognize what your feelings are telling you. A left brain culture is very individual oriented, as opposed to collective oriented. So as we know, that's one of the reasons perhaps we have so many guns in our culture, is because even though maybe they might be harmful to the culture, as we see in the inner cities, we look at the importance of our individual rights, and we think that they trump the collective. And so there, these are various, well, and another example of the left brain is it's very thing-oriented. So that's why our culture tends to be so material-oriented, whereas a right brain culture would be more relationship-oriented, more interested in how things affect us. An example of this that I see that needs to be addressed is the violent video games that so many young men are exposed to. We want to give them freedom, but we don't look at what that freedom, the impact that freedom has on our culture. And I don't know exactly what it is. I think for sure that it makes our young men more separative, and it makes them feel more at home with violence as a solution, since they spend so much time, and I'm not talking about all of them, but many of them spend so much time with these violent video games. I can't see how that can do anything but be harmful in certain ways. And yet, you know, some people can do that without any harm to themselves. So it's there again, we come back to the, how do we balance the right brain view and the left brain view? And I don't want to tell anybody how to do that. What I'm trying to do is just to get people to look at the two options that we have, and actually our first and most fundamental act of creation is the integration of these two streams of information, because our senses take in information and they're filtered through these two brains, and the two brains send their understanding of what's going on to us as consciousness. And when information arrives at consciousness, these two streams of information, then we have to decide, do we want to go with what the left brain says or the right brain says, or make some sort of compromise between the two? And that makes us who we are, because we have these right brain options and we have the left brain options, and even if we're left brain dominant, we can always choose the right brain option. So that's where our free will comes in.
What's interesting too, because I was also reading on your website, one of the reviews a woman had written was fascinating to me, because she said whenever she learns anything, she has to back up until she gets a kind of a more, what, not etheric, but more of a metaphorical picture in order to understand it. Something like that, you know, because you said at the beginning something about we have spirit and we have higher mind. I don't remember the exact words you used. But just the straight linear learning isn't enough of a picture if you really want to get into balancing your brain and using the whole thing, right?
That's right. One of the things I'd like to point out is the left brain is polar and the right brain is nonpolar. Now, what does that mean? Well, the universe is made up of polar and nonpolar molecules, and polar is what things like water and things that dissolve in water, and nonpolar is oil and things that dissolve in oil. And the ideas that the polar brain send to us, I think that they must respond when we try to mix the nonpolar and nonpolar. Yeah, I'll start over. When we try to mix nonpolar and polar ideas, it's like mixing oil and water. It can be done, but it doesn't happen automatically and easily. there's a resistance between polar and nonpolar getting together, and there's also a resistance in our mind, in the ideas we have between polar and nonpolar ideas. And so although we might think that, well, we have two brains and they're going to integrate, that's really our job to integrate them. Mm-hmm. That's what makes us who we are, and it's not always easy to integrate the ideas that the left brain gives us and the ideas that the right brain gives us, and it causes us a lot of problems. And this can be very cultural. An example of this is the belief that God is a loving, merciful being, and at the same time believing that God sends his and her children to everlasting hell because they have made a certain mistake on this planet, on this confusing planet. Now, none of us, none of our listeners would do that, would pour gasoline on their kids, no matter what mistake they made, and set them on fire and kill them in this life. And that would be merciful compared to sending them to everlasting hell.
Right.
So this idea that God would send us to an everlasting torment for making some mistake is just so radically opposed to the idea of a God of mercy and love that it's just mind-boggling when you actually set back and put these from a context and look at these two ideas and imagine that you can combine them and believe that God has both of these qualities. And this is an example. We all have lesser ideas that are really in conflict. And so, you know, before I forget, one of the things that people want to know what they can do to better their lives and bring themselves into greater harmony. And one of the things we can do, one of the things that I started doing a long time ago, is look for internal conflict.
Hmm.
We're all very practiced at watching TV and finding our opponents say something that seems to be in conflict with their beliefs. And if we would only turn that criticism on ourselves and look for our own conflicts in a loving way, we would be much better off. We would start eliminating our own conflicts. And we can only really eliminate our own conflicts. So if everyone would start working on their own internal conflict instead of working on everybody else's conflict, we would make much faster progress. Because if you'll notice, when Democrats complain about Republicans or point out their flaws, the Republicans just want to dismiss it. They don't want to hear it. And it's the same thing when Republicans criticize Democrats. Democrats just ignore it. So Democrats need to be criticizing Democrats, and Republicans need to be criticizing Republicans, because Republicans tend to be sensitive to the feelings and opinions of other Republicans, just as Democrats do of other Democrats. So, to get back to my point, we need to look for conflict within ourselves. That's how we, because we all, peace is all around us. There are people who have peace, so we know that. The problem is that we bring conflict into our lives, or other people bring conflict into our lives, and that disrupts our peace. So if we can eliminate the conflict within our own brain, that's how we achieve peace.
It's well, we also promote conflict through our TV and all that kind of stuff, don't we?
We do.
And through the video games and through our politics and so on, we promote that external conflict quite a bit. Do you think that's changing in the collective? We're talking about 2012 here. Do you think it's changing and that we're getting to the potential of what you're calling the unified brain? I guess what I'm thinking is maybe there are many, many people talking about their inner conflicts now and raising their consciousness around that. Do you think?
Well, I think both unity and conflict is happening. It's pretty obvious that the polarization is growing. If you look on television, and my hope, but it can just go so far. Our culture. There's a pattern, a fundamental pattern in culture where you go too far in one direction and then you see that you've gone too far and you go back and you go in the other direction and you go too far and you go back and forth, and it kind of in a channel that keeps you, you know, pretty much in the direction you're going. And so our culture is getting more polarized, but at the same time, there are more and more people that are becoming enlightened, and they are dropping out of polarization. So I'm, you know, the Mayans say that the world is going to change in December, and I'm hoping that part of that is that could well be the end of polarization, or I mean, of increasing polarization, and maybe polarization will start reversing, and will as not just as a small group of people, but as a large group of people. A shift will start taking place back towards greater unity. Now, we slowly got there, and it may be slow to change back, but it still could be the point where the change starts.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like yin and yang, isn't it? If you have very highly yin things, ultimately they become yang.
Yes,
and
it is.
It's the same thing. Well, I also believe in the movement of energy. I think the frequencies are moving faster, and I agree with you that I think the orientation is to unity consciousness. I really do. It's because the world's getting smaller, for starters. We have to know that intuitively, don't we, and instinctively.
We do, and that's one thing about the left brain. It's the reasoning, and it's the right brain is the intuitive side. So in order to get more in touch with our intuition, we need to be more in touch with our right brain. And the intuitive insights happen in a flash, and they can change us very quickly. Whereas if we have to rationalize our way to our solutions, that takes a long time. So if we could get more into the right brain, we could see rapid changes in our culture.
So, but you're not saying we have to think our way into the right brain.
That's true. I mean, yes, I'm agreeing with you.
So let's talk about the military-industrial complex. What do you think's happening deep within them? Do you think, for example, your book would be wonderful circulated amongst that, wouldn't it?
Yes, I've had people say it would be great if every member of Congress had one as well, because our, you know, it's really a military industrial congressional complex, because the Congress is the sugar daddy of the military industrial complex, because they're the one that feeds them the money and allows them to have this power. And in order to get into, you know, I'll kind of start from the beginning, in order to get into Congress, you have to fight. That's the way the system is set up. And so that favors left brain men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Because the left brain is our fighting brain. The right brain is really our peace brain. And so what happens is we tend to get a bunch of people in running our country that are left brain dominant, and that are focused on our security, because the left brain is our security brain. It's the brain that takes care of us on as individuals. It's our earth brain, and it's an aggressive brain, and so it favors military solutions, and it favors and as being thing oriented, it favors corporations. Because and corporations have done a lot of good, you know. Again, I mean, I want to point out that I'm not negative on the left brain. That we need a left brain. All the qualities of the left brain are important. We couldn't do without them.
We get things done with
balance.
We get things done with them, don't we?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And so I don't want anybody to think that I'm putting the left brain down in any way. But what has happened is it's really taken over. It fails to see the context. It fails to see the responses that can happen from some of the seemingly good actions that the left brain sets out to do, such as even the drug war. You know, there are good intentions behind the drug warriors. You know, they see the problems that drugs can cause, and they say, well, if we just put the bad people in prison, mm-hmm. and if we just separate people from the drugs, it's going to solve all the problems. Right. Well, it does solve some problems, all right, but as Ron Paul said that he hated drugs, but that the drug war caused five times as many problems as drugs do. So, you know, if you understand that, that's a rationale to end the war. It, you know, some sorts of legalization may indeed cause more problems, but if you end the drug war, you're going to reduce the problems by many magnitude. The drug war is funding terrorists, and our politicians know that. And we partly got into the drug war through the corporate window. Back in the 1930s, mechanical hemp processing machinery was being perfected, and it threatened to allow farmers across the nation to grow hundreds of thousands of acres of hemp. And that threatened two very powerful groups. It threatened the plastics industry, who had just because hemp products can replace plastics. The hemp fiber is very strong, and you can mold this with resin and produce very competitive products to some of the plastics. And
well, I also did not know that. Wow.
Yeah, it also threatened the timber interests of the newspaper giants. All the newspapers could be made from hemp paper, and that would have vastly reduced the wealth of the newspapers. And of course, the newspapers had the ear of the people in Congress. And so these two, the plastics industry and the timber and newspaper people approached Congress and managed to get hemp stopped dead in its tracks. And the way they did this was to stop the growing of marijuana for medical purposes, because if you can't grow it at all, if you could grow it for medical purposes, there would be no reason why you couldn't grow it for industrial purposes. But if you can stop it, if you can make it a dangerous drug, as they did, they made it a Schedule I drug, which has no redeeming value whatsoever. But cannabis had been used for centuries in various cultures as medicines. So, and they really fooled Congress at that time. They lied to Congress at that time. But now this idea has gotten so entrenched that even if you convince members of Congress that this was an incorrect step for them to make, they're afraid to, our culture has been so indoctrinated with this fear that our congressmen are afraid to step out and speak up because they know they would get voted out of office. And so this is one way the Congress and the corporations are working together, and the military, they're left brain dominant, and as a left brain dominant, your first act is to take care of yourself, so that to protect your job. And so,
but tell me this, I'm just curious about war, for example, Iraq and Afghanistan are places where people are doing the real, like bombs and horrendous violence. Doesn't that egg on the left side of the brain to continue driving itself even harder?
Yes. As I said, the left brain is the brain that takes care of us. It's responsible for our security, and it's energized by fear, whereas the right brain is energized by love.
Mm-hmm.
So it really feeds our fears.
So back in the 60s when we were all having those love-ins, there was real good logic to that. That was a rebalancing act, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
It didn't quite work fully yet, but never mind. Do you think it's part of our evolution to finally come to terms with those things, James?
Yes. I have to think that. That's a hopeful thought, and it's a loving thought.
It is, isn't it? And also back to hemp. Isn't hemp coming into its own again?
Well, it is.
I don't mean just marijuana, but marijuana too. But hemp itself is being used for fabric.
It's grown in Canada, and it's grown in Europe.
Hmm. And it's not facing legal or corporate harassment?
No, it's not.
Hmm. So there's a change going on here, isn't there?
Well, there are, the whole world is changing, and it is changing for good, as well as bad, and I'm hoping I'm trusting that the good is making more rapid progress than the bad.
So, how can you help us? Do you have sort of thumbnail things that people can use in order to become very conscious about the actions of their brain and how to change it and how to redecide?
Well, one of the first things would be to know whether you're left brain or right brain dominant. And a way to do that is to take a test. You can take a test on the internet. You can go to my website, thewholebrainpath.com, and there are dominance tests on my website. I would suggest the person take two of the tests, and if they agree, then that's probably tells you whether you're right brain or left brain dominant. If they are in disagreement, take a third test. There are three or four tests there, and hope that if two out of the three indicates, and if you do have two out of three, maybe that means you're fairly close to balance.
But in your brain plasticity, which we hear a lot about these days, doesn't that change that? Have you changed your left brain dominance quite a bit with all the wonderful work you're doing?
Well, I don't know if I have. I've certainly opened my mind to the right side. I think the left side's still dominant, but I think it has. Yes, I think it has changed some. So back to this point, what I was going to say is the point is we need to look at our non-dominant brain,
mm-hmm.
and recognize that it is our weaker perspective, and to make a conscious effort to consult our non-dominant perspective to see what it has to offer, because it's the one that typically gets shoved aside when we're making decisions. So that's one point. The other one I made earlier, I didn't know you would ask this question, so I wanted to get it in, and that is to be self-honest. To look for conflict, because and if you'll ask your brain to point out ideological conflicts, conflicts in your belief, it will answer you. It may not answer you the moment you ask, but you may find tomorrow or next week, suddenly you're realizing that you have these two ideas that are in conflict. And when that happens, you want to not forget those. You know, even if you don't have time, if you're, you know, pulling into somebody's driveway for a party, you know, write it down or remember it and go back to that and try to resolve those conflicts between your right brain ideas and your left brain ideas, because that will bring you more into harmony in your mind.
And of course, for those of us who are concerned with what we project, I suppose we project that conflicting energy, don't we?
Well, we pretty much project what we believe, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. And so that's a really good exercise. I'm going to do that for a while after I take the test. What else do you recommend that people do?
Well, running, managing your brain, working with it, is somewhat like working with a smartphone.
Oh.
It has many capabilities, and it has more capabilities than most of us are aware of. And
well, that's
to
good to
better
know.
Use your smartphone, you need to understand it. You need to understand what it will do, first of all, and then second, once you understand what it will do, you need to understand how to get it to do that for you. And the same applies to the brain. And so we need to understand what the left and right brains do, and or what they see and how they respond to what they see, so that we know what options we have. And to do that, my best solution is really to read my book. I don't just say that because I want to promote the book, but because it really is was written for that purpose, and it's really, there really isn't no other books that will explain what the right brain, the two brain perspectives see and how they respond and how that reflects in our culture. The first half of the book is theory, and the second half of the book looks at our culture and how the brain affects our culture. I look at the military-industrial complex and how industry is affecting us, and then there's a chapter on the drug war and a chapter on peace, and so it's really,
and in the peace one, there's
like
a lot
books
of
in one.
And there's a lot about various cultures headed toward or working against peace in it, isn't there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And a wonderful bibliography.
So anyway, in one way or another, we need to understand what our brains are, how they help us.
Mm-hmm. And how we can take charge of them. I suppose you become really more and more familiar with what your this is what I'm thinking as I read it, that I could become more and more familiar with which side of my brain is activated in a given time, eh?
Yes, I'm sometimes a little amazed at how that my understanding keeps evolving, and I keep more and more I listen to people, and I can tell whether they're coming from a right brain, where they're giving me a right brain idea or a left brain idea.
Hmm.
I mean, first I had to kind of stop and think, but it's just becoming more and more easy to do that, and it's just a matter of really understanding our perspectives. We have the perspective, you know, maybe I should have been more clear on what perspective is. Perspective reflects what we see from our position. And I always like to start with the physical world, because the physical world is a reflection of our mental world. And when we move around from place to place, we gather different perspectives. And it's the same thing with our brain. When we study different things, we acquire different perspectives. And two people can have the same perspective but have different perceptions. because of their education and their feelings and their wants and needs. So perception is a very complex thing. And it's from perception that we make our creative decisions. But perspective is really the first step in that process. So it goes from perspective to perception to creation. That's kind of the three fundamental steps that get us to creation. So we have a left brain perspective and we have a right brain perspective. And just as we have a right eye and a left eye, and the two combine to give us a stereoscopic or a three-dimensional vision, by having two brains' perspectives, we have a three-dimensional mental vision. And so we want to have both of them contributing to the best of our ability in order to have the most balanced mental perspective.
So actually, it seems like it might be useful for me to change my perspective when I feel stuck, eh?
Yes, it's difficult to change the brain. I mean, to just jump into one brain or the other, but we it's very easy to change your perspective, to look for the big picture perspective or the focused perspective, the collective perspective or the individual, the cooperative or the competitive. That's the way to do it, to work through the mind, because the mind is under our control and it's easy to control.
It's really interesting. I love the fact that your book is called The Whole Brain Path to Peace. And I think a lot of us have been praying for peace, and this is sort of gives us something. It's just a wonderful book with a lot of material on how we can change the whole collective brain, really, eh?
Well, and thank you for that. I might add that I spent 19 years full time to get to this book. I did go through a couple of other books that I threw away, but they really helped me get to this point. And the universe managed to support me all through those 19 years. Gave me just enough money that I was able to stay home by myself and write, but not enough money that I was able to get out and be distracted. So it's amazing how the universe works.
You've been a writing monk, eh?
I have.
So tell me this. Do you do workshops? I recommend people to get this book because it'll really elevate your concept of possibility in 2012. But do you give workshops or anything now?
I don't yet. I've recently developed a PowerPoint presentation. So I go around some and present that, but that hopefully is coming. I'd like to develop a DVD because I know a lot of people, that's a very efficient way, getting and cost-effective way to getting the message out. So that's certainly on the horizon, but I'm not quite there yet.
Well, we'll look for that on your website fairly soon. We have to draw to a close, so would you like to give people your contact information and, again, the name of the book?
The website is thewholebrainpath.com, and the book is The Whole Brain Path to Peace, and it has a subtitle, The Role of Left and Right Brain Dominance in the Polarization and Unification of America. And you can contact me through the website. There's a email address there. And don't forget, the brain dominance tests are there, and you can read reviews. And I have some good links. I'm developing links. I'm slowly adding them, but just the last one was the Khan Academy, which is a wonderful learning institution. It's free. Guys trying to educate the world for free. Very intelligent guy. So I have good links there. So
wonderful.
Check out my website.
Wonderful. Well, I thank you so much for being a paradigm shifter and doing great work and spending 19 years on this.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much to James Olson talking about the whole brain path to peace. You have been listening to Paradigm Shifters. If you have any feedback on this show, email me, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com, and suggestions for other guests, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. And again, we say thank you so much for those of you who are listening, for tuning in, and thanks to James Olson. Good night.